We hear Interval every Thursday at about 3:30 on Fresh Air. It's about 11 minutes after 4 o'clock. You're listening to WUHY-FM in Philadelphia. My name's Dan Miller. I'm sitting in for vacationing Terry Gross. Joining us on Fresh Air are three Philadelphia-based jazz pianists who play at area clubs and restaurants. Peter Shiner appears regularly at the Salad Alley Entrees space in the Warehouse in West Philadelphia and has also appeared at the Top of the Twos in Center City. He's also played salsa in Philadelphia Latin bands and recently went to Chicago and toured the East Coast with the Junior Wells Blues Band, which featured guitarist Hubert Sumlin. Uri Kane has also appeared at the Salad Alley Entrees piano, as well as at the Borgia Tea Room and at the Commissary Piano Bar. You might have seen him at Periwinkle's a while back, which is on 19th Street north of Rittenhouse Square, where he played for about 2.5 years in a group which also featured recorder player Joel Levine. Both Uri Kane and the third member of our panel, Dave Posmentier, have played with tenor player Bootsy Barnes, mostly in North Philadelphia clubs. Dave Posmentier also appears at PT's on Front Street on Monday nights with the Phil Giordano Big Band and occasionally appears in the Posmentier Brothers Quintet with his brother at the Newsstand. He's also now playing at the Fairmount in the Hunt Bar with the Herb Hesch Ensemble. Herb Hesch plays clarinet. All three of my guests have varied schedules and backgrounds, which includes teaching, playing, weddings or bar mitzvahs, jobs which may lie more to the commercial side of playing also. We're going to spend the next while on Fresh Air discussing the differences between the various places they've played and the difficulties of survival for a working musician. Well, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks. Thank you.
Did I get everybody's background correctly, by the way? Is that fairly accurate?
Good. Yes.
Any corrections? Yeah. Okay. If we could start out by talking about some of the different atmospheres that you've played at, perhaps mentioning some of what your favorite have been and what's conducive to a good atmosphere to play. Uri, you want to start?
Yeah, well, the the best job that I've had recently was the one that you mentioned before, the Periwinkle's job, and that was, I would think, a really ideal sort of job, at least in Philadelphia, for a jazz musician, because it was a job that allowed a group to work for a steady period of time and really didn't put any restrictions on the sort of repertoire until the end.
Well, it was a long-lasting job, which is pretty unusual.
That was also very rare, because most of these jobs, you get them for a while, and then they bring in another group, or they just suspend music. It's a very hit-or-miss thing in a lot of places.
Dave, how about you? What are some of the different types of jobs you've done?
I guess in the last year, I've been doing more jazz-oriented gigs, playing-oriented, rather than playing for people to dance, which is more of a commercial.
What are some of those dance gigs that you were playing?
Well, I've done the outside, what they call the outside weddings, bar mitzvahs. I did that for years, interspersed with a few jazz gigs. And recently, I guess in the last year, I've been kind of leaning more toward playing gigs, gigs that I consider just being able to play what I want to play, basically, and try to communicate and have people listen to what. And with Bootsy Barnes and Mickey Roker, I'm playing with organ with them right now, off and on as a trio. And there's a good energy going when we play, and people just tuning into what we're doing, and we're just kind of grooving along. And it's just creates a good atmosphere.
That sounds drastically different from playing a wedding, for instance.
Pretty different, yeah. Although occasionally you do get a wedding where there are moments when there are moments in weddings, but a lot depends on who you're playing with too, as well as where you're playing. That's what I've found.
Peter, you're playing at Salad Alley now in West Philadelphia, but you've also had some experience playing with salsa bands, and then the blues tour that you did with Junior Wells. Any preference for for what you did?
Well, they're all different, and I guess it's impossible to do them all at the same time, and so they all have a different quality. I think for the past 10 or so months, playing at Salad Alley has been my mainstay, and it's been good from that point of view. I've sort of gotten used to it, and I enjoy it because it's a solo piano situation where I can pretty much play what I want and experiment, and that's what's been absorbing me for these past 10 months. And the other, probably the most exciting job that I ever had was with Junior Wells, and that was a different, that was more of a performing situation where people were listening, and it was a very, a more, it was just a very, I was definitely like a sideman. I was, there was, Junior Wells is an extremely intense and, just, very focused, powerful performer, and he's, and it was a different kind of thing where I had to listen and fit in. There were no rehearsals, and I just had to, you know, be support him without getting in his way, and that was something very exciting. Also, that mandated traveling all the time, though, and I can't, so I can't do both, both right. things
and
at
there's
once.
Also the regularity of playing a job like the Sal Alley job that you have now, where you, for one thing, don't have to hustle up a gig for next week, and,
right?
You know,
right.
And that type of anxiety is not so much of a part of it, also.
Right. That's.
Is it important that people listen to you? Or, you know, in a bar, for instance, you might be playing and everybody's enjoying the music. They're not really listening. But perhaps at a concert, you know, then that's what they're here for. When is that important?
I think that the main difference with people listening is that it does make you want to play in a more intense and a creative manner. But it really doesn't bother me personally when people aren't listening, because you're just being paid to practice. And if that means that you're sitting there for 5 hours playing and people aren't really listening, they're just doing what they're doing in a bar anyway, it really doesn't matter too much to me.
I think there's a certain amount of feedback that feels like it's necessary to have to really get going. You know, there's the aspect Ori mentioned, but there's also communication side of music, of playing. And, you know, it's good to feel, it's a nice feeling to communicate with people and talk to them through your music, and they talk back, you know.
Right. I think it's important to get, it's very nice to get a few signals that a couple people are responding to what you're doing. That makes a big difference.
Yeah.
You don't expect everyone to listen. I think, also, if you're playing in a group, though, you know the other people in the group are listening to you, and that makes it still a different thing again, because it's all right if the people aren't listening. At least the musicians are listening to you, and that I can get by on that.
What also happens when you're playing a place and somebody has been listening, but they don't like what they've heard? I'll use Salad Alley as an example, because there are people that come. They're also to hear classical music, for instance, and the schedule rotates with different piano players. And if there's a jazz player there, well, perhaps they don't want to hear that. Are they brazen enough to come up to you and say, "Boy, I wish you'd play softer," or something like that?
Definitely softer.
Softer's a big one, huh? Are there jobs you won't do now, but perhaps jobs that you've played in the past, but you know, either you've had enough of it, or for some other reason, you just would rather pursue other type of work?
Yeah, well, I've generally decided to not to really play the outside, you know, weddings, bar mitzvahs, and dances and things like that. And the only time that I really would play them is if it's maybe a few days before, and there's just nothing else happening, and you know, and I could, you know, use the money, and if the people that I'm playing with are, I figure I can have a fairly good time playing with them, and I'll do it. But a lot of that type of work, you have to book 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks in advance, and you know, I've kind of decided I'm not going to book them, because I don't want to preclude the possibility of getting a better gig, a jazz gig or something like that. So I'm kind of holding off and waiting for, you know, gigs that I like.
Well, that brings up another question. Is it very difficult to survive? Well, obviously, it's not easy to be a jazz pianist and pay the rent, or be any type of musician. There's a lot of competition. It's not the type of thing that's paid well anyway, except for a very few people who've made it. But in Philadelphia these days, is it easier? Is it more difficult? What's your experience has been? And is it seasonal also?
I think that for a piano player in Philadelphia, it's much easier to make a living than any other musician, in terms of people to play jazz, because there's always places, at least it's been my experience, where if nothing else is going on, you can find a place which at least just needs a piano player to make noise.
At least a solo type of gig, right?
And then you work with singers. Everybody needs a piano player, and so it's much easier. People that play saxophone or drums have a much harder time because in a lot of these clubs they just don't need that much noise. They think the music will be too disruptive.
Are you called in on gigs at last notice very often, where it's a matter of somebody hands you the charts and or perhaps doesn't even have charts, you just
That's
have
right.
to know the tunes.
Yeah.
How do you cope with that if you don't know the tunes or the ones that you
I do a lot of filling in, you know, for people, different people. Even in jazz things or even I've filled in I'm filling in a week right now for Howard Whaley at Fairmont. And, you know, just over the years, you kind of start to see what it entails to go and sit in with the group, and you just start to know what to expect, you know. And it helps if you can play tunes in all keys, if you know a lot of tunes. I know a lot of standard tunes because I was in band since I was about 13, and we just played standard 40s, 50s, from the 30s, which are, I play, you know, you play in with jazz groups as well as commercial groups. You play this
it really makes you improve your musicianship, though, because it's not only a question of expanding your repertoire. You have to have a lot of musicianship to be able to read things, sight read them, because that's expected a lot. Transposing, if a singer says she wants to sing a song and she'll only sing it in B major.
And she ends up singing it in C anyway.
Well, maybe, but you can't if there's some that do know. So you have to be ready for that.
Are there times that perhaps in the outside work, like the weddings, that you could recall from jobs you've done, that people have asked for tunes, well, feelings or what Latin hustle, the type of pop stuff that's generally expected. Are you ready to go with those? Are they easy enough to play on the spot?
Tell you, it depends on how far you are out away from that type of thing. Like, if you're not doing that for 2 or 3 years, and then you start doing an outside gig, they might hit you with all these tunes that if you haven't listened to WFIL or whatever it's called now, you know, the pop stations, top 40 stations, you won't really know the tunes. And you probably experienced that. And, but if you're going to be occasionally even doing the outside, it's good to once in a while keep up with
the
top
Billy Joel,
40.
Yeah,
just so you won't, you know, in case they don't have music. A lot of times they'll have music anyway, the band leader.
One of the stereotypes of a jazz piano player is the cocktail jazz pianist, and it's difficult to say what that really means, but you have a general image of somebody playing the type of piano that's not going to be too intrusive. The tunes will be fairly accessible. You have to have any tune that anybody wants to hear at your fingertips. Perhaps you work from a fake book, which will have that in, or maybe not. But do you have a definition of cocktail? Does that sum it up? Or?
I don't know. I think that there's a connotation of blandness in cocktail music, which is not to say that people that play it don't play it well, but... I think the three of us, anyway, are probably more influenced by jazz, in which you're supposed to be doing something else with it. But in a lot of these jobs, they don't want to hear that. So you just basically sit and just play the melodies and keep it very inside so everybody knows what's happening.
Without getting too technical, what does that mean for your piano playing? Does that mean perhaps some pseudo-classical type of left hand with lots of lush?
That means that you don't play rhythmically as much, and that means that your harmony stays inside.
Very straight.
Yeah.
Very
stay closer
straight
to the melody, and you play more tunes usually. Turn them over fast.
I think, though, that definition of a cocktail pianist depends a lot on who's playing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think different players can approach it differently, and, you know, like I generally am thinking more in terms when I play anywhere of trying to play with more energy, more intensity, extend myself a little bit out of my normal realm, just to try to, you know, do different things, almost kind of amusing myself musically, keeping myself interested in what I'm playing. So I think you could do that to an extent anywhere you play. Mm-hmm. Now, it might not go over so well sometimes, but I think I think it's important to have that attitude if you're really into that direction, which I am.
Well, one of the things about Cocktail is that you got to play requests. So there's an obvious one I can think of, My Melancholy Baby, and also perhaps Misty as another all-the-time request. Are there others?
Yeah.
People love Summertime.
Yeah. Is that a fairly... Oh, well, perhaps during Christmas, I guess you get all the Christmas tunes requested. And...
Less.
Right, okay.
The more current requests seem to be Sending the Clowns, and at least in the last real 100% Cocktail gig I did, the requests seemed to be Sending the Clowns and You Light Up My Life. That was a couple of years ago, although it's probably changed. I don't know.
I'll bring up Feelings again. It's probably another one.
I played them a few times tonight.
Yeah, I haven't done that many. Probably not as many as these guys have done as far as Cocktail playing. But I think, you know, you could take even a tune like Misty, which has been played so much. You know, you could take any tune or even Feelings and do anything you want with it. You know, you can play the requests and play them your own way. You know, you don't have to play them the way that people always hear them.
Yeah, but I hear that if you don't play, if you drift too far, aren't too straight, then that wasn't Misty. Mm-hmm.
Well, it depends how... You could use a little ingenuity, too, as far as going back and forth, in and out. You know, don't stay away too long from what people are familiar with. But kind of mix it up, you know.
What are the differences in some of the different environments that you play in? For instance, Dave and you, Uri, you both play with Bootsy Barnes. What's that context like as compared to some of the other places you've played at?
Well, I think that... In a job like with Bootsy Barnes, the people there are much more involved with listening to the music and reacting to it. And you get much more the feeling that you're playing for them, and it does make you want to play longer.
Give us a sense, first, of the repertoire and the type of music that Bootsy plays.
The repertoire with him would be, I would say, bebop. A lot of standards, though. But a lot of jazz standards. And the people know the tunes, and they want to hear them. And it's not a question of, like, if you're working in one of these places where they want a piano solo or something where you really have to play very quietly and just provide background music, really.
Well, let me ask you, what are the clubs like that you play with Bootsy at?
They differ, but, you know, most of them were in North Philadelphia and South Philadelphia when I was playing. I assume they're the same now. Mm-hmm.
Well, the question I'm leading up to is... Are they places that you would feel that you'd be there anyway, or do you feel like you're not really fitting in with most of the clientele there?
I never got a bad reaction. As a matter of fact, I felt, in some cases, even adopted as a mascot. It was a reverse sort of thing, which was also pretty strange.
Peter, how about you and some of the salsa bands that you've played in?
Well, I didn't feel... I felt very welcome, although we played around, most of the Latin bands work at around 5th and Erie, that part of the city, and there was a feeling of being in a different world, because I didn't know Spanish, and I was kind of out of it, you know, I felt very welcome, I felt fairly comfortable.
I remember I was working one gig with Bootsy, and on a break, and a lady, it was a black lady, asked me, how did I feel being the only white guy in the club? And she said, I don't know, if I were you, I wouldn't feel real comfortable. You know, and I said, well, you know, I've been playing with Bootsy for a while, and, you know, it seems like music kind of transcends any kind of other differences, or, you know, music is kind of a common denominator among people.
Well, and, okay, but know. did you feel when you first started playing with Bootsy any sense of having to prove yourself?
Well, I think when I, you know, I didn't feel that, but I got a lot of good vibes from people, and I felt no no racial negative feelings at all.
Right, and then also whenever you join a new ensemble, you sort of have to prove yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. But I think, I've we play a lot of the same clubs, you know, and I've made a lot of friends, and it's really just a very friendly experience. It's a good vibe. I always feel that way.
Have either any of you done much touring? Peter, you did a tour with Junior Wells. Did you, Uri, or?
I've done almost none. I've played some things outside of Philadelphia, but not anything extended at this point.
What was that tour like for you, Peter? I mean, that was like the first big leaving of Philadelphia to go out on the road and play.
Well, it was very different. I mean, the only way to know what it's like is to do it, and it was very exciting. It was a musically very rich experience because the musicians were so good. In some ways it was a letdown. I've found out what being on the road was like, playing one night at one spot and moving on is like, it just requires some adjustment. It's different. I mean, you spend a lot of time sitting in hotels. You spend a lot of time driving.
Did that conform at all to your previous image?
No. I knew that was part of it, but I didn't realize what a large. That's the real work, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, the playing is a lot of fun.
How about when you came back? Did you come back with a sense of, well, I've just done a tour with somebody, so I'm perhaps. Well, was there any new value attached to how you thought of yourself as a working piano player because of that?
Yeah, it made me feel. I mean, it made me feel good to have done to have been associated with that work. With that work, it also sort of made me reevaluate a whole lot of some of the notions I had about what kind of career I would have in music, because I could not, as much as I found that playing blues stylistically were my roots, but I found out that culturally maybe they weren't. I mean, because I was playing with these guys who had played that kind of music for 20 years, and they were from the South. They were blacks. They'd done it for 20 years, and they'll do it for the rest of their lives. It was an amazing thing to do, but I found that I wouldn't want to do it. I found that I didn't, even though I was welcome and I was comfortable, I felt like I needed to relate the experience to someone else who could, and so I came back and it did a lot of things to me in terms of making me think about, made me think a lot about my vocational directions.
Let me ask Uri and Uri, you and Dave, is being a working musician now conforming to your preconception of it? Well, Dave, you say you've been playing since you've been 13, so that's already, you're dealing with that at a pretty young age. When did you start playing?
I guess about then also.
Well,
but not necessarily working as much. I mean, I started working, I guess, when I was about 18.
Was there a time of confronting reality of what the gig's really like, or at least the drudge part of it that might not have been so apparent when you started?
Well, I think it's natural to see that because, you know, you really don't have an idea of anything that you're doing until you start to do it. But it's really a lot of fun to do it when it comes down to it. To be paid to play music is, I think, lucky.
What impresses people when you play?
It depends who you're playing for. I like to think that when you play honestly, that impresses people. When you play when you put your full energy into playing, that moment, that's what people like, and. When you play, you know, with intensity and try to create, you know, rather than just kind of being a machine playing perfunctorily.
Is there any other sense to playing honestly?
Well, you know, ironically, when you play honestly, you're not so concerned with impressing people. And, you know, ironically, that I think that goes over the best with people when you are not that concerned with playing for them. Not to say that you don't care about them, but I think there's a difference between trying to impress people and just trying to relate to people honestly.
Well, are you ever tempted to go for the flashy? I mean, the flashy might mean lots of arpeggios or lots of chords that are real big and people can see your arms go up and down in the air. Or it might mean playing big single note things that don't really sound right, but then you come back to the regular song again, and the contrast is really, it stands out and it's flashy. Are there times when perhaps, you know, you're there all night and you just want to, you want to try it out and see how it works, the reaction that you get?
I play that way for fun once in a while, but I mean, that's not really what I'm into, and I don't really feel comfortable doing that in a serious way.
Uri, do you have any response to that question?
Sometimes you do, I think, but I think what Dave is saying is right.
Okay, well, this leads into another question. Let's say you're playing a job, or let's just say you're playing a job, and you might be playing it for 6 months, which might be a great job, but you might be playing some of the same tunes over and over again, and there does appear to be a regularity, because that's the nature of what you're doing, right? You're there every night. Is there a sense of it being a job, of it being a gig, as opposed to the sense of it being an art form, something that you have to spend your whole life perfecting? When do you have those different perspectives?
I don't know. I think that happens on a lot of jobs, and I've had experiences, especially if you really are the backup, like there's a singer and she only does the same tunes all the time, which I had an experience of doing that, you'd start to go crazy after a while because it's just too monotonous. But you try to change up. You quit the job and do something else. Go to the next job.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there have been times, definitely, when somebody would even come up to me and say, "Wow, it must be great being a musician, you know, it's doing your art." And actually, it'll be, you know, there is that aspect of just a job going to it. Even among good jobs, you know, even among good jazz clubs, you know, there is still the aspect of things get tired sometimes, and might do the same tunes, and you might feel a need either to change the group or learn new tunes or something like that. I mean, it can get kind of, you know.
When do those thoughts occur to you in terms of, oh boy, this is just a job tonight, or this is really art? I mean, is it how you reevaluate the whole evening the next morning, or is it something that's constantly a battle in your head while you're playing?
I think that's the attitude you have going into the job. Either it's just a job, or you're expressing yourself. Has a lot to do with how the job's going to be in actuality, the reality of it. Because you could go into a wedding, and you can really play with a lot of feeling, and it could be contagious too. And you know, the guy, it's happened to me. You know, I've played with these old guys who are kind of, you know, it's just like going to the office, and I'm really getting into the playing, and it's contagious, and all of a sudden they feel this kind of different vibe, and they get all excited, and they start enjoying themselves a little more, you know. So, and I think by playing more and more of these jobs, where you actually, it is more of an art form, it can get your mind and your attitude into approaching any job more like that. You know, no matter where you are.
Since you brought up weddings, do you have some?
Well, I was gonna just this whole thing about art and job. I don't, for me at least, it's not that some things you feel like you're doing art and sometimes you're doing a job. I think that it's just like it'll come and go. Sometimes there'll be some moments or something, mm-hmm. where you'll just get you. It's okay. I think that's the way it is in my experience. Occasionally, you just feel like you'll play something. You know, you'll get absorbed in it. And you can't really plan it. It just happens once in a while.
When you're feeling it's a gig, this is not art. If somebody comes up and said that was a great tune, does that change it all around for you, or is it a deeper type of?
It's for me. It's a deeper sort of thing. What are these people saying? Because that does happen a lot.
We were talking about weddings a moment ago. When you play a wedding or bar mitzvah or some other family-oriented type of celebration, do people come up and say, oh, boy, I'd really love to sing this song. Would you accompany me? Is that a part of the job?
It doesn't happen a whole lot, but it happens, you know.
But in jobs like that, you're generally at the mercy of the people that hired you. And it can be pretty strange. I played at a wedding on Saturday night where they taught us to take a break for 2 hours because the people really didn't want to hear what we were playing. They just wanted to hear the disco music. So those jobs, I think, are... You put yourself more at the mercy of what the people want and expect.
Well, how does that mating usually go if somebody says, would you play Feelings for me? I'll sing it in B major.
You have to do what they want you to do.
I think you have to reorient yourself a little bit and get more into the idea of just having a good time, making it a little lighter, not worrying so much about art form, just thinking about, you know, this lady, whoever's singing, her enjoying herself, you helping out a little bit, that kind of thing. So if she goes off beat or off key, you know, it's not really that important.
I think it makes it easier. If you're going to play the outside, if the people are going to sing along, I just assume, that's fine with me.
Add to the absurdity.
Did that happen when you were playing the top of the twos? Because that's a bar where people hang out and they're regulars and people feel comfortable.
It did. In fact, on the night that we auditioned there, some people who were having a very good time came in and picked all the tunes out of the book for us, and they sang them, and that was fine with me. That was.
Do you all mostly work from fake books, or a lot of the time, especially in a solo type gig where people will come up and make requests, and also you have to have a constant supply of tunes all night because it's just yourself, it's not a horn solo and bass solo and so forth? Do you all work from fake books, pretty much?
Yeah, I think almost everybody has a real book, which they bring on the job.
If you could create a favorite playing situation, what would it be? Or what's your favorite band? What would you like to most be playing in?
Well, I have a quintet with my brother, Posmentier Brothers. We do a good deal of original stuff. And I really enjoy that, especially like when we play at the newsstand. That room is kind of very conducive to what we're doing. People just, it's small, it's intimate. People just listen and get into what we're doing. And that's kind of pretty ideal, and just playing with musicians who you feel comfortable with, and maybe in a place that the people are fairly comfortable with you.
It sounds like, from what you said before, that it's important that people listen.
You don't want to have like a feeling of tension or animosity, you know, between you and the audience. Of course, there are all degrees of how positive the audience, you know, relates to you. But I think you as a musician can work on that too. You know, by your music, by your attitude, you can bring people to you through your music.
Peter or Uri, do you have favorite contexts that you...
Well, it's hard. That's hypothetical. I mean, it's hard to answer. I guess ideally, the ideal group would be maybe a quartet or a quintet, where in some kind of situation where people could get together and work and play all the time, and where all the musicians were very receptive to the extemporaneous musical gesture, and where you could do that steadily. That would be pretty nice.
And where all the musicians had the same sense of time.
Sure.
Also, I mean, by watch time too. What type of jobs will you be more likely to take musical chances at? And what's a musical chance for you? Is it like trying out a new tune?
That's one thing. Playing original music is always sort of taking a chance because you're doing something nobody else has done. But I think by and large, the an environment where people are playing jazz, let's say, or improvising, whatever the form of music they're playing, is much more exciting. Because that's where you're really showing what you can do.
I think you can take chances in almost any situation, but it depends on how. I like to think of if I take the music out, so to speak, kind of getting away from the usual sounding things. I think it's good, even for my own ear as a listener while I'm playing, to not to stray too far for too long from familiar sounds and kind of build on top of a familiar bass or a groovy kind of feeling underneath it all that people and myself can relate to. And if you're going to take the music out on a tangent, kind of take it from a bass, you know, create kind of a bass to take it from.
What type of cues do you watch for when you're taking it out and you want to get some feedback from your listeners on whether they're relating to what you're playing or not? Is it the amount of fidgeting going on, or is it just your own sense from what you're hearing?
I think I basically use my own self as a listener, basically to judge, you know, what I think I should be playing. You know, I'm a listener just like anybody else is a listener, and I have I'm a musician, so I have a little more ear for maybe some more complex things than maybe some people, but I also have an ear to want to hear some groove type of things and rhythmic and just feeling good type of music underneath it all, and I think that's important, you know.
Do people, back to stereotypes about jazz piano players. There's two that I can conjure up. One is a successful musician who leads a very glamorous life, plays in a lot of flashy places, meets a lot of flashy people. Mm-hmm. The other, that's one stereotypical image. The other one would be, on the other side of the spectrum, somebody who plays in a very dark type of club where there's always the regulars there, and the regulars know the piano player, but he's like in the corner, he's a fixture, and a nice guy, nice lady, but it's the opposite of the glorious life. What are the images that people who know that you're piano players but don't really know your life have about you?
I think it varies. I mean, there are situations where it is kind of glamorous, and then there are those situations where it's anything but, you know. I think a lot of people think it's kind of glamorous in a way, or to be playing on a stage, because maybe compared to a lot of people's work, just the fact that you're performing for people on a stage is kind of glamorous, you know.
It's also the whole nightlife scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you're actually doing it, it's kind of far less than people think.
Do you have?
I can't put it into words. If they could see my face, they'd know.
What I think. Yeah, I see.
Well, it sounds like it's certainly maybe the flash stereotype is less of a part of the reality of a day-to-day working musician. What are your aspirations for the future? Do you want to stay in Philly for one? It's a first question for everybody.
I don't know. I just finished going to school, so I've basically been here. I don't think that. In Philadelphia, I think most people would agree with this. There's really not as much opportunity here as there are in other places, either for a studio recording or just meeting other musicians and playing with them. I think everybody, you know, basically wants to leave at one point or another just to see what something else is like. But I think in Philadelphia, there really is a lot of different opportunities, especially for piano players to do a lot of different things, to train here. And there are a lot of there is a broad range of experience that you can get here, but I don't think financially you can really make more than the sort of thing that we're all dealing with, which is playing day to day at different places.
Dave, how about you?
Well, I just moved into a house, in Philly, and I'm kind of like it there, and so I don't, I'm kind of content for right now to staying around here, and I just feel that it's not real important to me where I am, externally. I'm more interested in, where I'm going inside myself. So I want to just move, musically, just keep learning and keep developing the skill of playing music.
Pete, do you feel like hitting the road again?
Well, Not that's something that I expect that I'll do again. Although I'm not too worried about when. Like I'm not right away. I'm pretty settled down now to just playing and just having my playing evolve and playing what I feel like in Philadelphia.
Is there a typical success story, a typical set of aspirations about what most jazz musicians or most piano players who play versatile types of careers would want to do? I mean, is it recording and getting a big name and having that regular type of work on a big scale, or is that maybe what most of your jazz player acquaintances don't feel?
I think it varies just from individual to individual, you know. I mean, there are people in any job who kind of want that, you know, and then there are people who are kind of more content to, you know, not to be striving every day and thinking about, you know, being up in lights and making a lot of money.
Yeah, that's not my objective at all. I just like to play, and I
just like to go to the Phillies game, you know.
Well, I'd like to close by asking you all to tell us where we might be able to go hear you. Don't invite us to any weddings. Other than that, Uri, where are you playing these days?
Right now I'm playing at the Borgia Cafe on Wednesday nights and at the Commissary on Friday, I think from 4:30 to 8:30. Those are the only steady things. And the Takers tonight, if anybody's going to be around in Germantown.
Are those all solo type gigs?
No, they're all with a bass player and named Ed Crockett, and Joel Levine, who plays recorder, and various other people, too.
Dave, how about you?
Well, let's see. Every Thursday night I'm playing out in Marshalton Inn near Westchester. It's a jazz gig, but it's kind of about an hour from the city. So, I don't have a whole lot right now. I'll probably be working with the Posmentier Brothers Quintet at the Newsstand probably in September. So people just look in the paper. And Bootsy Barnes I'll be working with September and October. And also I play with Steve Giordano Quartet, which is a real nice group. I think we're going to be at Takers on Thursday the 21st.
And then there's the Herb Hesch.
Yeah, that's just this week, down at the Fairmont Herb Hesch. And on Monday night, Phil Giordano, big band at PT's. I'm doing that with him.
Now, Peter, can you tell us your schedule at the Entrees Salad Alley? Because that's it's a rotating.
Well, right now, it's every Wednesday and Saturday night from 6 to 10. However, not this Saturday. They're closed. They'll be opening on the 10th. Mm-hmm. Every Saturday and Wednesday, though, from there on. And that's the only thing that's definite right now.
Is it exclusively Saturdays for you now?
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you all for coming, taking your time out from everybody's respective busy schedule. I've been talking with three Philadelphia piano players. You should know that by now if you've been listening. It's Uri Kane, Dave Posmentier, and Peter Scheiner have joined us on Fresh Air, and they play at different area clubs as well as do different types of outside work. That's about it for today's Fresh Air. Tomorrow on the show, we'll be hearing at 2 o'clock a tape interview done with the Heidelberg Group. That's a German anti-nuclear group which is now starting a global study of nuclear power, and they spoke recently with WUHY's Nick Peters. Following that, I'll be speaking with Medard Gabel. He is the author of Energy, Earth, and Everyone, and that's a book on renewable and non-renewable energy resources that can be found in the globe today. At 3 o'clock, we'll continue with our series on Hard Times for Dreaming, and we'll be hearing from the residents of Southwark, which is a Second Street working class neighborhood whose families of that neighborhood are feeling somewhat threatened about the possibility of upper-class families buying out their housing. And they'll talk about how they respond to that tomorrow at 3 o'clock. At 3:30 every Friday, Bill Van Wert joins us to review films showing in the Delaware Valley area and to talk about films that will be up on TV in the coming week. And tomorrow he'll be speaking about Brubaker. At 4 o'clock, Michelle Kuhar, who is the chief of the Pennsylvania Film Promotion Division, will join us. She's the person responsible for bringing in film companies to do shoots in the Pennsylvania area, and in Philadelphia, she's brought people in to do scenes for Rocky and Dress to Kill, which is now showing in local theaters. Contributing to today's show has been Frances Davis. Production assistance has been by Charles Hardy and Maeve McGorn. Technical supervision by Joyce Lieberman. My name's Dan Miller. I'm sitting in for Terry Gross, who's taking a brief summer vacation. I hope you have a great evening.